There's no crying in baseball!
You're 5 feet nothing, 100 and nothing, and you got hardly a speck of athletic ability. And you hung in with the best college football team in the land for 2 years!
I said, fuck you, Joe Boone. I do it myself.
In here, there were two guys killing each other. But I guess that's better than 20 million. But what I'm trying to say is that if I can change, then you can change. Everybody can change.
Welcome to Montucky Skies. I'm Biggs.
I'm Brandon.
And I'm Jake Johnson.
Jake Johnson.
That's right. You may know me best as Nick from New Girl, but I'm currently appearing in Colin Trevorrow's Jurassic World. This is my second work with him, and he had to personally talk me into being in the movie.
You know, I think we just found our starting point.
I hope not. I haven't seen the movie yet.
Oh, Brandon did.
Okay, great. Talk about it.
You know, I actually saw this movie twice.
Really? Already?
You know, the first time I saw it was about 22 years ago.
Was it pretty much the same?
It is almost a shot-for-shot remake of Jurassic Park.
Really? Because in the trailer, I saw a pterodactyl eat a person, and that did not happen in the first movie.
I mean, it's not like a shot-for-shot remake, but damn close.
Like, okay, so which character is Chris Pratt then?
He is Sam Neill's character, basically.
Oh. That, I guess, makes sense.
Sure.
I mean, they're obviously definitely funnier.
Jake Johnson is the Samuel L. Jackson character. I do know that much.
I just thought of something that's a little off base, but fuck it, dude. We live off of tangents. We'll tangent back to Jurassic Park in a second, but... So I was afraid for a second you were going to tell me Chris Pratt wasn't funny, that like he's doing a serious role. I was like, oh no, I could almost see the Jack Black career coming. Like when you hesitated for a moment, maybe you didn't even hesitate. I just read it.
I think you just read it into a hesitation. Yeah.
But like Jack Black was like on such a fucking hot streak, and then he did King Kong, and it's like, I think it was like pulling, like, and I feel bad for Jack Black because it sucks that we like put people in a box and we're like, you can't get out of the box. But I think it pulled the rug under a lot of people when you see Jack Black and like he's not supposed to be funny in it. You know what I mean? Like,
you know what it was in that movie? It was the lack of Kyle Gass.
Kyle could have made it work, dude.
That's right.
Have King Kong steal Kyle Gass and go up. And that'd be great because Jack Black's totally screwing him the whole time.
Jables, help me, please. Sorry, Cage. You're stuck with the monkey.
I would
watch
the shit out of that movie.
Why don't you stop complaining? We're trying to get famous, Cage. You fucking bitch.
I'm mostly surprised you can fit in his palm, Cage. I feel like we could hammer out this script tonight if we wanted to.
I don't think it's a bad idea. They should at least do like a 10-minute thing. I mean, Jack Black probably knows some people. Is it Paramount? Are they the ones that did it?
That sounds right.
So. Yeah, it seems like it. I don't know.
I'd like it if he did.
How come they never had a shot of King Kong climbing? Like do the thing where they show the mountain with the stars, and then all of a sudden King Kong comes in on off a star and leaps onto the mountain. That's the opening scene of our movie, dude. All right, back to Jurassic Park.
Jurassic World.
Jurassic World. Sorry, you led me to believe it was the same movie.
Wow, that was really convincing. No, there's a lot of stuff that really, like, it's the same freaking thing. Like, the scene in Jurassic Park where they're in on the little guided tour on the electric jeeps, and the T-Rex, like, breaks through the wall and, like, goes to eat him and breaks through the glass. Like, there's almost the same scene where the kids are in a plastic bubble and the dinosaur's, like, trying to break through the glass and... You know, there's just a lot of stuff like that just really, like...
Is there a scene where someone goes, welcome to Jurassic World?
There is.
Oh, my God.
Where they're going through the gates. Like, everybody, like, they put them on a... Everybody, like, it's a big, like, Disney World sort of place. And as they're entering the park on this monorail, like, goes through the big Jurassic World gates. They, like, basically, like, scratched out Jurassic Park and wrote World.
Like, you can change that digitally. You didn't have to do that. Just some guy who's working the sets is just like, I'm fucking tired.
I'm done with this.
I'm tired, you know, and the CGI guys are dicks. Like, let's just get this done.
It's funny because they took a lot of the original set pieces from the Jurassic Park.
Like Newman?
His corpse in this corner.
It's just like, ugh.
It's like an old man Logan when Hank Pym's body is out there and it's gigantic. That's basically what Newman is in this movie.
No, there's a scene where they actually find the original, like, headquarters that they're all hiding out in.
Oh, so this even takes place at the same area?
Yeah, it's the same island. Okay. Yeah.
Now, do they recognize the previous movies, or is this just pretty much a remake?
They recognize it. In fact, they kind of spoof the original movies in a way. Because you were talking about that. Who are you today?
Jake Johnson.
Jake Johnson. Well, you remember you were in the scene in the control room where you were wearing a Jurassic Park t-shirt.
That's right. With the distressed logo and everything, so you could tell it had been a while since it was released.
That you found on eBay.
That's right. Real quick, since we're on the Jake Johnson thing, can I tell you how Colin Trevorrow convinced him to be in the movie?
I wish you would.
Okay, great. So basically, Jake Johnson was wrapping filming whatever he was filming at the time. It might have been the most recent season of New Girl. And he had been intending to take the summer away from acting and spend time with his wife. And Colin Trevorrow, who had worked with him on Safety Not Guaranteed, called and said, hey, I'm working on Jurassic World, and I have a part for you. And he's like, I'd love to do it, but I'm going to go on vacation. He says, that's okay, because this part's only going to take you 12 days to film.
In Hawaii.
You're going to get to have a scene with every single actor in the cast. Meanwhile, you only have to show up to one set. You are in this one set every time, and you get to wear a bitchin' Jurassic Park t-shirt. Oh, and you're basically playing Samuel L. Jackson's part. And Jake Johnson goes, and then I had to accept it because this is the only time in my life I'm going to get to play the same part as Samuel L. Jackson.
So they turned a black man into a white man. No. The whitewashing in Hollywood. Right. Are there any black characters in it?
None that I can remember.
Yeah, jeez. Are they all
white?
There's an Asian dude. B.D. Wong's back.
Yeah, B.D. Wong makes a resurgence. The guy who took over for Hammond, it's some relative, I guess, but he's Indian?
Wait.
It's America.
When you say Indian.
I mean from the subcontinent.
All right, just checking. Just making sure we're on the same page here.
Subcontinent of India.
Okay.
That's shocking to me that there has to be one black person in the cast, doesn't there? I'm going to look into this. I'm going to go to the Jurassic World IMDb page and see how many names we have to read before we get to a black person.
So you're hoping
it's
going to
be
extra.
A while.
Yeah, it's going to take a little bit.
You know, the acting in this, Chris Pratt steals the show. He is a badass in this movie.
He's the main character, right?
He is one of the main characters.
Okay.
And the woman that he's acting against is terrible.
Bryce Dallas Howard.
She is
terrible.
I've only liked her performance in one movie. Not Spider-Man.
Oh,
3,
I
actually.
Thought you were gonna say I've only seen her in one movie.
No.
That's the one I saw.
You know I've watched far too many movies for that. I did actually like her performance in 50-50.
Who did she play in 50-50?
She's Joseph Gordon-Levitt's mean ex-girlfriend.
Oh, yeah, she's pretty good.
She's pretty good in that. But she is not good in many of the other things she's in.
So what we've learned is she basically needs to take Janet Jones' career.
All right, so I am going to get... All right, I'm going to read down the list. We'll see how long it takes me to get to, first, a non-white person, and then, second, a specifically black person.
Okay.
All right, so we have Chris Pratt as Owen, white. Bryce Dallas Howard as Claire, super white.
Let's just assume white when you read names.
Vincent D'Onofrio. Notably white.
Notably white.
Vinny D is definitely slimmed down since Daredevil days.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Ty Simpkins, he's a white child. Iraf Khan, this must be the Indian man you're referencing. He was also one of the guys in Amazing Spider-Man, the first one. Nick Robinson, white dude. Jake Johnson, white dude. Omar Sy, black dude. He played Bishop in X-Men Days of Future Past, but I know him best from an amazing French film called The Untouchables. That's just fucking haunting and beautiful and lovable. So that's our first black guy.
Does that have a scene where a baby carriage goes downstairs and somebody is like firing a gun behind
it? Unfortunately, it does not. It's about how a younger black Muslim man befriends an old racist white French man.
The racist part sounds familiar.
And then we get to BD Wong, and then it's all white people from here on out.
Can I just get on another sub-tangent here? My dog is such a good dog. Badge, not the one who chews cords, Mira. Badge just like went to walk over a cord, stopped, looked at it, and walked around. This is a dog who's grown up around like musical equipment.
He understands
the deal. What a great
dog,
dude. I don't think he's ever screwed up anything I've ever recorded, honestly. Like, I've literally recorded stuff with him just laying on my legs while I do it. Like, singing, playing tambourine, like...
Homeboy's chill.
Hammering piano, whatever. Anyway, back to Jurassic World. So, any other things of note from this movie?
There was a... The product placement in this movie is really overt. It's one of those things, because I saw it in 3D, because I went to the midnight release movie.
7-Up can just like fucking hits your nose while you're...
Yeah, that sort of thing. Actually, the one that really hit me was Jimmy Buffett's Margaritaville.
Nice. That would hit you too, actually.
But it was funny, because my wife even noticed it, like... And then my kids are like, yeah, that totally was there.
Before we move on, I have one question.
Before you move on to that one question, I have a question. Does anybody need another beer?
I would love another beer.
What kind of beer?
Dealer's choice.
Okay.
Just don't even look into the box. Grab one, and whatever you pull out, that's mine.
Brandon, do you need anything?
I think I'm good for now.
Okay, I'm going to get a beer. You ask that question. Great. I'll try to listen and put in my two bits after I deal with the beers.
Wonderful. Okay, so how is the Indominus Rex in the movie? Is it cool?
He's pretty cool. Yeah. Like,
is the Indominus Rex a he? Or is it a she? I'm genuinely asking because I'm not sure, but I know...
I think it's actually
a that
she.
They keep him female.
Yeah. And they've kind of gone away from the whole female-only population.
Naturally, considering it went so horribly wrong the first time.
Most of... They've kind of turned it into like a Serengeti park where they basically let the animals do what they do.
Sure.
With the exception of the major predators.
Yeah, the ones you have to keep locked away.
One thing that I'd found out after watching the movie is they took the original CGI code for the first T-Rex. And made it in, or used the same CGI code for the new T-Rex.
Yeah, they even have the scars from the end of the first movie on it, right?
I don't recall that.
Okay, I just know that's something I saw mentioned. So it sort of seems like the big theme of this movie is escalation. Does that sound... It seems like everything from the first movie and like everyone involved with Jurassic Park, the actual place, said, okay, things went wrong. Let's make it bigger.
And, you know, there's a few commentaries that I noticed watching the movie. The first one was the whole theme park tourist trap sort of thing where they're, like, processing people. Like, you...
Is there
you,
an...
You know, day one, you go and you get to see the giant alligator dinosaur in the water.
Uh-huh.
And it actually, like, they funnel people into this big amphitheater, kind of like a Sea World.
Right, like you're going to see...
And Shima. Then the dinosaur pops out of the water, eats a great white, and then they like lower the whole stadium underwater.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And like, I mean, there was some really interesting stuff watching it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not a good movie.
It's making all the money in the world. What I've realized, though, is when it comes to Jurassic Park, that franchise specifically, but dinosaur movies in general, I don't need good as much as I need fun.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. Like, if I walk out of there and start thinking about it and go, you know, that didn't make any sense. That was kind of stupid.
No, you don't.
I'm willing to pay that price to see a brontosaurus fucking around. You know what I mean?
Brontosaurus almost seems like it would be the last choice of dinosaurs, though. Like, Brontosaurus don't really fuck shit up, but that would be fun to see one fuck shit up.
Did you hear Kevin Smith's thing about Jurassic Park, how he rewatched it in preparation for Jurassic World?
No.
His whole thing was that he watched it and specifically looked, and not a single one of the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park has an asshole. He went out of his way to look. There's not a balloon knot in the bunch.
I absolutely believe that A, there was not an asshole to be found, and B, that Kevin Smith was paying attention for that.
And here's the thing. We know those dinosaurs shit. Because they show it.
There's a huge pile that they go swimming through.
So where exactly is that shit coming out of?
Got me, dude.
Because Kevin Smith didn't look for them, but I'm assuming the dinosaurs didn't have vaginas either. If they aren't going to digitally add an asshole, they aren't going to add a vagina.
I'm assuming that he was looking for that as well.
I would have to think so.
And dicks, but he probably just focused on the assholes.
Oh my God, can you imagine if in Jurassic World 2, there's a scene where like there's some big ass dinosaur walking around, and then like they drive by and they see its dick just flapping in the breeze. You know how sometimes you drive by horseback?
Yeah.
And you just see the horse dick waving around.
You know, I saw like the funniest thing when we were driving down to Bozeman for a job once. We took a back road from Three Forks to Bozeman, and we passed this horse pasture, and there were three horses all lined up having a pissing contest.
They were actually having a contest?
Dude, they were like, if you saw three people lined up, three guys lined up, pissing at the same time, they're having a pissing contest.
Oh, okay. When you said that, I was wondering for a second if there's a horse with like pushing a ruler with its nose.
Come on, buddy. Three horses sword fighting. We're gonna earn the not safe for network label today.
By the way, if nobody's ever picked up on that, that's because podcasts are just things on the internet in general are not safe for work. When there are caliber of things, that's why it's the not safe for network.
We find we're most comfortable in the not safe for work aspect of the world.
That's why I always do the not little. I just wanted people to know that.
It's why we like jesters so much. We like to roll around in the grime of the world and really wallow in it.
Yeah, it's true. Now, would you recommend this movie?
If you want a popcorn movie that you can just, if you just want to lose yourself in, this is a movie to watch.
That's why it's made approximately $100 bajillion so far.
Wow, dude.
It has the record for biggest Friday in film history already. It's bananas how much money this movie's
made.
Though,
and you know,
that,
when I
that
went...
That gets set almost every year. I need to see, yeah, like, tickets sold, and they never showed.
Well,
that.
When I went to the midnight showing, it was 90% packed.
That's not spectacular, though. Like, 90% packed on the midnight show. I mean,
I've been to a lot of empty midnight shows.
I have too.
I've been to a couple that were empty.
90% is pretty darn good.
But I've been to a few that were, like, packed.
Oh, for sure. But
like,
considering,
I'm thinking Avengers, for example.
Thinking about... But think about the context in which this is a movie based...
No, I'm saying,
like,
that's good. That's just, like, that's not phenomenal.
No.
But that's Helena.
That's exactly.
Theater.
And
yeah,
that's Helena. And
I get
when
it.
You
I
consider
get the perspective.
That, when you consider that this is a movie based...
I mean, 100 bajillion, that's amazing.
Yeah. Based on a franchise that hasn't had a good movie out, arguably in 22 years, depending on how you feel about 2 and 3.
Never saw them.
So for you, it hasn't had the franchise has only had the one movie. So like when you're combating with,
the one is questionable.
So when you're considering that, like, the last time people really, really, really loved this franchise was over two decades ago, it's amazing that it's doing as well as it is.
Yeah.
Like that bad taste from franchises, like we saw it with Batman Begins, we saw it with The Incredible Hulk, like that bad taste can really hurt a box office. And the fact that it's not with this is really impressive to
me. They really backed the right star,
yeah,
as
did.
Well. I'm sure most people are going for dinosaurs, but there's probably some people that are going
for Chris Pratt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they picked Chris Pratt, that was a bit of a risk, because Guardians of the Galaxy, even though it was Marvel, that was the riskiest Marvel movie to date.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Like, and there was a case to be made that...
Wow, you're just having a hell of a time over there.
God damn.
dropping beer.
Didn't drop the beer. I almost dropped me.
Okay. That's even worse. I just heard the sound.
Oh, yeah. You heard me go,
you're light as a feather, dude.
I am. God damn it. Come on.
So for people who didn't necessarily hear the bottle cap, because we were making comments on the mini episode of Skies about... Or maybe it was the Thin Man about the train
and the sirens. I
couldn't hear any of it.
So we just look like insane people.
Yeah. It reminds me of the thing I always hate in podcasts where they hear something and they're like obsessing over whatever they hear in the
and
background. I'm like,
do
I
not
can't hear it.
Hear it
at all.
By the way, Brandon, this is something you should know. When I'm in California, I've decided I'm going to occasionally put out the Montucky Skies bat signal and call for emergency mini episodes from time to time. And that's something you might just have to get prepared for in your day-to-day life. Then I might just say, Brandon, we've got some shit I need to talk about, and I need you there.
Gotham's calling.
That's right.
Gotham needs you.
Gotham needs you.
Oh, God. I thought today was Father's Day, and I woke up super depressed because my daughter was at my mother-in-law's house, and my stepdaughter was at her friend's house, and I was just like, oh man.
I ran into your stepdaughter today.
Oh, did you?
At the dollar store.
Was she being good?
Yeah. Okay, she came up and gave me a hug, which was kind of weird.
She's a friendly girl.
She is friendly.
Yeah.
Anyway, that kind of died quickly.
Yeah.
So I was, while you guys were having your little side adventure, I was looking at my beer label, and it says, ale brewed with natural flavors. Now that concerns me. Not because natural flavors concerns me. It concerns me that they felt they had to tell me that. Because that means they are compensating for something. Either somebody's accused them of some shit, or they're just trying to nip this in the bud before I start asking questions.
Let's talk about it, because we have a plethora of beers on the table today. So
yeah, we're doing a
taster. Let's talk about the beers for a second.
We already tried the Blue Paddle Pilsner.
Yeah, delicious.
Delicious.
Great
we both
Pilsner.
Knocked ours out.
Yeah, not my favorite Pilsner, but...
But a really good one.
It's. I think it might have moved up to the top 10.
Hey, hey.
Yeah. It's top five. Who am I kidding?
I was about to challenge you to rank your top 10 Pilsners.
Yeah, I could probably rank like,
I think you would have topped out at 7 or 8, probably.
Okay, so it's probably number 3. So, I'm not going to list all of them. I could probably list 4 that I really like off the top of my
just
head.
Just play the
so,
hits.
Yeah. The best one for whatever's sake is Pilsner Steve Urkel. Pilsner Urquell, like the very first Pilsner ever brewed in Czech. It was brewed in Czechoslovakia, still is.
Now it's brewed in the Czech Republic.
All right. All right, hockey fan. And then I followed it up with a Snapshot, which is a wheat beer by New Belgium. Pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon's drinking a
summer shandy that we kind of hit last week.
Yeah, which is our favorite right now of the summertime, I think. How's
that
beer?
I've got the New Belgium Somersault Summer Seasonal, which is an ale with no adjective to give me any more information than that. It's pretty good. It's a nice, very crisp, very clean, very easy drinkable beer. It's not particularly heavy in any one category. It's just nice, light, doesn't feel like drink. It's not heavy at all.
And I don't
like it.
I don't know how
that's kind of surprising for a wheat beer.
Yeah, right?
Or is that the wheat?
No, this isn't the wheat beer. This is the nondescript ale.
Ale.
Yep.
This wheat beer is not too heavy either, though. It's pretty light, so.
I was reading a couple articles over the weekend. They'd recently had the Beer Olympics. I don't know exactly what it's called.
Beer Olympics.
Is that the one that a couple Montana breweries won?
38 medals.
I saw a documentary about this. It's called Beer Fest.
Yeah. Yeah, I saw Blackfoot took a couple, like Lewis and Clark Brewery won the... did they win the big prize? I feel like they won the big prize.
You know, I don't recall that. But I know, like, Little Montana actually had, like... was up there with Oregon. I think they were second behind Oregon.
Okay. I'm not saying this because I can claim Oregon as well as I can claim Montana. I'm saying this because it's true. Dude, Oregon is fucking spectacular at making beer. like just Rogue Brewery alone is amazing. But then you got like Sierra Nevada, a lot of their stuff comes out of Oregon. Not all of it. No. I mean, not the main plant, but a lot of it is brewed in Oregon. There's just so many good beers.
Yeah, they're straight dedicated to the craft.
California's got some good ones.
I know, I'm looking forward to it.
Arrogant Bastard Ale, I'm a big fan of, but don't drink it in the summertime. It's too
heavy. Yeah, it's definitely a winter
beer. That's a winter fall. Yeah, definitely.
Definitely.
Of course, now there's, I've been talking to my friends in California, like, dude, you got to know, the only thing you can find in most bars is IPAs, which is fine. Like, I love a good IPA.
Oh, I love IPAs.
But I love so many other beers, too.
Yeah, I don't like IPAs in the summer. They're too heavy.
And my thing is, like, when I'm in a bar and they've got the microbrew thing, I'm not interested in seven different IPAs from seven different breweries. Like, that's just not what I'm looking for when I'm going to try a bunch of shit.
I will in, like, the fall or winter time. Like, I'll totally be all over that.
I should say, I'm not into those being my only choices. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. Okay.
I don't want the IPA to be the only representative of each brewery.
Well, I went to the Brewfest here in Helena this fall or winter.
It's something with dog, right?
Yeah, I know, because it's basically a festival for the Race to the Sky.
Yeah. It's like the winter dog.
Brew dog.
Yeah, brew dog. I think that's what, something like that. Yeah. Yeah, they got some good beers at that.
And I tried quite a few IPAs, but there is so much different beers. It's funny, because you get like these little tiny glasses, they're like 6 ounce glasses.
And I'm sure when you first see them, you're like, this is bullshit. What am I going to do with this?
But they're only like a quarter.
Uh-huh.
Now, people might be listening to this and thinking we're beer snobs, and I don't know about you.
We're alcoholics, and there's a subtle but important difference.
Well, the thing is, I think beer snobs are like, I only drank this, which ironically, I think a true beer snob is more Bud Light drinker. Not necessarily Bud Light, but something like that, like a domestic, because they're so fucking stubborn. They're like, I will only drink this, and they won't try all those micros. Like, I try at least 20 new beers every year. Like, just, I do. Like, every single year, I try at least 20 new beers the last, like, 7 or 8 years, I would say. So, I don't think that's a beer snob if you're constantly, you know, expanding your palate.
No, for me, a beer snob has to hit two criteria. Because for me, part of the snob thing is being able to be pretentious and condescending and sort of look down on people. So for me, a beer snob is never going to be like a Bud Light or a Miller or any of those types. But it's going to be someone who has their microbrew, whatever it is, and they will tell you, This
is the end all.
Yeah, this is the beer. Everything else we've been doing has been leading to this, and you are an idiot for drinking anything else.
See, and I would agree with you on that criteria, but disagree with the specifics of the domestics, because I know more people who drink the domestics who will not drink anything else. But,
I think they're a different caliber.
I'm not saying you're wrong
snob.
About that. I'm just saying I would like a different term for that, because to me, part of being a snob is being pretentious.
I can see that argument where a snob is somebody who, this is the highest level.
Exactly. They want to be able to hold it over you.
Can we call it like a beer racist?
Definitely.
There's definitely.
Like, I want it from America.
Budweiser. Yeah, that's all I drink is Budweiser.
That famous American family.
Because it's European now. Actually, it was never American. Like Anheuser-Busch. Just fucking listen to the name. The shit was from Germany, dude.
We don't spell in America. If your name is Anheuser, here's how it's spelled: Anheuser. We don't have any of that U plus E equals I bullshit.
No Uber sign.
No umlauts.
You know, I've been watching Ken Burns' Prohibition documentaries lately.
Nice.
I got the two out of the three of them. I am, like, amazed at some, not just the chicanery that went around, but, like, just some of the weird things that happened during Prohibition. Like, Anheuser-Busch, do you know how they made all their money in America after Prohibition? They started making, like beer at home kits. Like
nice.
They had kits where you could make Budweiser at home, and they sold them. And so like the law basically said you could make this beer, but you can only drink it in your house, and only the members of your household could drink it. You couldn't drink it for anybody else. So people were grabbing it and fucking making it and selling it to other people. Like it's, there's just so many like stupid things with that law. It was unbelievable.
By the way, we just got done saying how un-American Anheuser-Busch is. But what you described is probably one of the most American moves I've ever seen. So they're American in spirit.
Yeah, you know what Prohibition was successful at?
Creating
making a
drinkers.
Lot more people drink. That's basically what happened. Are your headphones okay?
Yeah. All oh, right. No, I'm not.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, right there. Right there. Perfect.
Okay, Brandon,
right
are
there.
You okay?
Slower,
I'm totally good.
Harder, slower, harder.
Oh, why did you fuck with it? Now I got it. No.
I thought you said...
Okay, just so you know, every time you fuck with it, you're fucking with mine, too.
All right, I'm sorry.
All right, I got one, and I'm going to live with it.
We have a weird, like, three-prong thing that... I should just bring down the power headphones and as a power strip.
I mean, at this point, we're committed to it. Let's just ride it out.
Oh, I'm not doing it right now.
Okay,
I'm
good.
Just saying. In general. Anyway. So yeah, beer racists.
I'm not a fan. We've got beer snobs and beer racists.
Which beer and racists kind of go hand in hand a lot of the time. Anyway,
in American
especially
history,
like
they really are.
It's a lot of the same beer for the same people. So racist is a really apt term.
If you have a wife beater, an ill-fitting wife beater.
With mustard stain.
Of them, but I don't wear them a lot.
And you're wearing them with jeans that simultaneously seem too high and too low on your body, and you're holding an unlabeled bottle, I'm just going to assume it's Bud at that point.
Yeah, probably.
You know what's one thing that I grew up with that I... kind of wish that I would be able to try once as an adult was the generic beer that just white label
said
beer.
Oh, yeah. The one you can order in movies. You go up to the bartender and say, one beer, please.
Yeah, that was a thing. My dad talked about that.
Well,
like in the 70s especially, it was definitely a thing.
Mm-hmm. I remember being like growing up in the early 80s, and you could go to the grocery store, and they had an entire aisle. Usually it was like the front aisle where you walk in had all just generic brands like potato chips. It was a white label that just said black letters said potato chips.
It almost looks like they came out of MREs, like it's American military beer.
And I'm sure it was terrible.
You know, Anheuser-Busch actually... The reason why all the micros have been coming out in the last, like, what, 10 years, 15 years, something like that, is because Anheuser-Busch had a really good lobby, and they basically just lobbied to make it harder and harder for smaller breweries to exist. So that
you know, like the American way, squash your competition with no regret or conscience.
Yeah, and that shit in the late 90s started to go away. I'm not going to credit this to Clinton. Yeah, people know I'm a Democrat.
And Clinton was probably working on more important things than making it easier
for
breweries.
Yeah, I don't think he was concentrating on beer. But there was a Republican Congress. Like, this was a bipartisan effort.
Yeah,
so if you're a red state or a blue state, be fucking glad that, like, they ended that shit. Because variety is good.
You know what's interesting about that, though?
It makes domestics cheaper. It just does.
At least 70% of microbrews now are owned by major brewery corporations. Like Anheuser-Busch owns, I think the ones you're drinking,
the New Belgium
is owned by Anheuser-Busch.
I bet you're right. And if it's not them, it's somebody else.
Or whatever their parent company is. I can't.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's actually Stella Artois.
Guess what? Brewed and bottled by New Belgium Brewery, Fort Collins, Colorado, USA.
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 But there's got to be a parent company if it's New Belgium, right?
If it's Fort Collins, that might actually be under the Coors.
I was going to say, that sounds like Coors territory. I just love that the thing that can unite both Republicans and Democrats in our country is more beer. Like, if we want to get everyone on the same page.
I have a kind of quick, interesting story is when we're talking politics and beer. So, my daughter is friends with the governor's daughter.
Oh, nice.
So, the last week was the last day of school, and they have a big party at the governor's mansion for her kid or his kids. And so she got invited over to the governor's mansion to play Capture the Flag. And
nice. Dude,
that's awesome.
That's a great use of the governor's mansion.
Absolutely.
And so I got off work 5 o'clock and I went up to the governor's mansion to pick up my daughter. And I parked across the street and walked across the street. The governor is sitting on the front porch drinking beer.
Of course he is. He's Montana's governor.
Yeah, I've actually met the governor a number of times before he was governor, and it was always at Jorgensen's. They have this big like celebration party at every election, and it's one of those things. I've gotten my wife to go, and she's like, the first time she's like, I don't want to go, like it's gonna be, I'm like, no, you're gonna have fun, trust me. And we like showed up, and there's like just, I mean, hundreds of people packed into this big room, and they're all spilling out all over Jorgensen's. Everybody a shit face, including our future governor.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
And that's how you win votes, baby.
Yeah, well, he wasn't running for governor, but I think he, I don't remember which
that's
office.
That's how you win.
He was
win.
Holding,
he was
holding
an
office, yeah.
Uh-huh. And that's how you get people on your side in Montana. In Montana, you can't do that thing you can do in other places where you play the straight up, like straight-laced, uptight politician set on his goals thing. To win over Montanans, you have to be willing to fuck around a little bit.
We seriously considered having Jeff Bridges as a senator.
Exactly. Like, that's the kind of people you're going to be governing. You need to get to their level.
I can't imagine Jeff Bridges ever seriously considered it, though.
No, of course not. But that is my, now that I've achieved one of my life goals, I have to replace it with something, and I think convincing Jeff Bridges to become Montana senators might be the next one.
So you touched on your bucket list check-off item.
I got to check one off. I was so excited. Because yesterday, Saturday, for those of you hearing this in the future, at the Governor's Cup, I was able to achieve something that I thought I would never be able to achieve because I thought I'd never be in such a position. And because so few people get to do this. I was able to accept and pose for cameras with a giant novelty check.
It's so great.
The greatest thing I've ever done in my life. Honestly, that might be my legacy, is the guy who was just beside himself to take a novelty check.
I'm telling you.
Oh, I'm going to the bank tomorrow.
Yeah,
I've already endorsed it with the Myrna stamp to make it even better. I will be at the bank tomorrow morning with the giant novelty check.
Just make a fucking scene. It won't cash.
What do you mean you won't cash it?
I am the Myrna Loy.
So for any of you folks out there who've seen in movies or TV people or in the lottery or anything like that, people taking novelty checks, not only is it exactly as an awesome feeling as it looks to be, it might be better. Like, there's nothing cooler than seeing someone look you dead in the eyes, say congratulations, and hand you a giant piece of foam board with a dollar sign on it.
Now, let me ask you a question.
Uh-huh.
What do you think is better, being able to receive one of those checks or being able to write one of those checks?
Definitely receive.
I don't know. I think it might be fun to write a giant check.
But here's the thing, though. Anybody can go to the craft store, get the poster board, and print out the label on it. But to have someone offer you one, you can't force that. That has to happen naturally.
How many times do you think it takes to like do the giant signature right so that it fills out?
Well,
I gotta imagine you fuck up at least one.
In 2015, it takes one because you can save your signature digitally and just blow it up.
I think what they do is actually like take a regular check, sign it, and then digitally scan it, blow it up, and print it.
I think you're right.
That's not as much fun.
No.
I would demand to sign the giant check.
Of course.
Why not?
Right? I want to have a giant signature to go on the
giant
check.
I want a giant pen to sign a giant check with. I just do it in public. Like,
you want a 3-foot Sharpie?
I want get high as fuck signing.
No, I want one of the sharp ones where you have to like dip it in an inkwell and
shit. There's like an ostrich feather on the back.
It's an ostrich big enough. We might need something from Jurassic Park. I heard raptors are closer to chickens, right?
Yeah. That was it. I mean, that was the one story I had in my belt. I've got nothing left. You guys are going to have to drive this from here on out.
Well, I do want to... So in August, I'm doing a new podcast called Biggs on Film. I have been going Rocky crazy ready for this because it's... I'll just spoil it. The episodes, we're going to record a few so I have some bank because I anticipate I may not be able to get people for comment. It's basically going to be commentaries over films. But as with the Montucky commentaries that we put out, you don't have to like watch it to enjoy it. It just adds to it. But like, I have been going crazy, dude. I will have by when we record on Tuesday, if that's still happening, I will have watched 3 Rocky commentaries to like gather information. I've scoured the internet. Like, yeah, dude, I cannot wait to
see,
do this.
I'm going the opposite direction. I've gone on Rocky blackout. Anything I see with Rocky in the headline, I'm like, no, all that's going to happen is on Tuesday, I'm going to watch the movie again to refresh my memory and jot down some notes and then watch it again and react on the fly. And I figure with you researching and me being an asshole, we'll be fine.
Yeah, you don't have to research. I got that down. But one thing that is making me excited to watching these is like that Creed movie is coming out.
Yeah, with my boy.
Fucking wait.
My boy, Michael B. Jordan.
I know. It's going to be good, dude.
I can't wait.
Michael B. Jordan is playing Creed's son, I believe.
Yeah, have you seen the picture of him filming with Sylvester Stallone?
No, but...
I'm just excited.
Yeah, Rocky's going to play his trainer, which I think is also a great move because... They're gonna basically like keep Rocky in the movies for continuity, but he's not gonna be the main character.
Which is a similar move that they did in Mad Max Fury Road, where he's more like the guy who takes you into the story rather than the center of the story.
Yeah.
And I think that's the move, especially with Sylvester Stallone is only gonna get older and steroids can only take you so far.
Yeah.
So like at a certain point they had to make some kind of move like this, and I'm glad that this is the one they chose to do it with.
Well, and Rocky Balboa was pretty good, but it's like a fitting end.
And hell,
Rocky,
that was probably what, like 8 or 9 years ago now, right? Didn't that come out in like 2006?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so I mean, add another 10 years to what he looked like in that one.
Yeah, because I saw that on a double feature with The Departed, which like I didn't even know what The Departed was. I should lose my nerd cred for that because like I'm such a huge Scorsese fan, but like I didn't even know what the Departed was. But I was like, Rocky.
Yeah, of course.
So I enjoyed the hell out of Rocky Balboa, and then I stayed during the part, and I'm like, this is so great. And it was at this theater, McMenamins. I don't remember which town, but it's close to Olympia. And like they have couches that you can sit on, and they have waitresses come, and they have this deal, or they had a deal. I don't know if they do anymore. But for $10, you got a movie ticket, or that night, 2 movie tickets. You get 2 beers of their, like, the microbrew they make in-house.
Nice.
The one I drank was Terminator, which was delicious. And a burger.
Nice.
A fucking now, good,
see,
big, juicy
burger.
This
sounds like the perfect theater to go to when you're stoned, except for one thing.
And I was.
It's called McMenamins. And you should not name, if you're going to be attracting a stoner demographic, even unintentionally, don't name your place something stoners can't pronounce when stoned.
Well, I know they have a lot, like they have like 8 or 9 theaters in the Northwest, like they're all over. I think they started in Portland and then sort of expanded out from there, but they're awesome, dude. Like they have theater
chairs.
They're
basically
the
Alamo Draft House of the Northwest.
Yeah, from what I've heard, yeah, definitely. So it was a good time, man. 2 great movies.
Yeah.
2 great movies spun off.
2 great
of old
tastes that
classics
go great together.
And when I say that, I'm talking about the original Scarface, because The Departed took the X's from it.
Yeah.
Do you guys know about this?
Yo, yeah.
Yeah, like the original Scarface from the 30s, before somebody gets shot every time, which I didn't know when I watched it, but I've seen clips on the internet since. There's an X somewhere on the screen, which means a character is going to die. And And so The Departed, every time somebody dies, like, there's an X right before it. Like, Scorsese did that as an homage. And so there's even a scene where a dude gets thrown out of a window. When you look, it's by this construction site. So it's just like, X, yes, X, 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 exactly. X, like, all the way down.
And then there's some that are, like, it doesn't look like an X in the shot until you realize it's the shadows making an X. Like, there's all sorts of brilliant little ways to slip it in like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it was. I saw a future Best Picture at the time, and a part six off of a Best Picture. Has that ever happened
the
before?
The only regret is that we aren't at The Departed Part 6 yet.
How many sequels of Best Pictures have there been? I'm going to say three for sure, because I know Godfather 1 had a sequel. Uh-huh. Godfather 2 had another sequel.
Yep.
And then... what the fuck was I just going to say? The
one we were just talking about.
Yeah, whatever.
Rocky.
Rocky. Rocky had six of them.
Now, here's a question I have.
Silence of the Lambs was... Nah, it wasn't really a sequel, but it had sequels.
Now, here's a question. Return of the King does not have sequels, but is a sequel.
Has prequels.
How do we
count
that? Yeah.
Yeah, everything... tied to that is a prequel.
Uh-huh.
I'd say the prequels after that, it counts.
Deal.
It counts for
if they happen chronologically after the release, I'm with you.
Can we think of any other ones?
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, can the listeners
I can go
think
look.
Of
listeners,
any?
Write us. Go to Facebook. We're not hard to find.
Did Easy... No.
Easy E? Yeah, he did come visit me. It was awesome.
What was the one with Jack Nicholson? Easy Rider. Was that a Best Picture?
Because
they made a really shitty sequel to it.
No. They didn't.
Somebody else did, yeah. But still.
Jack Nicholson's not in that, though. It's Peter Fonda and Dennis Hopper. He's not one of the two main guys.
No, he's not one of the main guys. No, he's the third wheel.
I don't think of it as a Jack Nicholson movie. I think of it as a Peter Fonda movie.
It is a Peter Fonda movie.
It was, but I mean, like...
Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper
I
movie.
Stand by what I said.
Fair enough.
It is a Jack Nicholson movie.
You are
movie.
Technically correct, and that's
Jack
the best
Nicholson
kind of correct.
Driven movie. So was that a Best Picture?
I don't... think it was no.
Okay, that was just more like it speaks third generation
exactly
man. Okay,
and even then I think it from reading some of the stuff I've read, because obviously I wasn't alive when it came out, it seemed like it even took a year or two for that aspect of it to take off. It's almost like a cult film in its own way, but it very quickly picked up its audience. But it from what I read, the initial reaction was ew, no, and then as the counterculture started to find it picked up its respect.
Did they ever make a Casablanca 2?
Yeah, man.
Did they really?
No, yeah, absolutely.
Did Casablanca win Best Picture?
I actually can't remember if it did or not. Let's go find out. I'm going to go look into this.
We are taking a deep dive.
Yeah, we are. The thing that'll... Oh, hang on.
No.
Oh, my God. Stop it, phone. I'm going to kick you in the vagina.
So what would a Birdman 2 look like? Do we get to find out what happened to him? For sure.
I think that would totally ruin that movie.
Yeah, you probably shouldn't make a sequel. But as a rule, you generally don't make sequels to Best Pictures, I think, is what we've established. It's generally not a good idea unless...
Casablanca was a Best Picture.
Okay. They seriously made a Casablanca 2?
Yeah, man.
Really?
Yeah, man. It happened.
Wow. Okay, so that's another one.
Uh-huh. The thing...
They almost did Gladiator, right? We've talked about that. On
yeah, we have. We went deep into that.
That was Gladiator, too.
So, Easy Rider, for the record, did not win any Academy Awards.
Okay.
It was nominated for two awards. Actually, Jack Nicholson was nominated for... best actor in supporting role.
Yeah, see, Jack Nicholson joint.
And Peter Fonda, Dennis Hopper, and Terry Southern were best writing story and screenplay based on material not previously published or produced.
Weird. Oh, that's just what they called it?
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So... It did win a lot of other awards, Golden Globes, Canes.
Won Golden Globes. I didn't even know that was around back then.
Oh, it was actually just nominated for Best Supporting Actor with Jack Nicholson.
Hey, 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 Jackie himself. Man, I'm really getting buried on that
comment.
Right,
because his Oscars were... Wait, did he win for the... He didn't win for the Joker, right?
No, he did not.
Okay.
The only person who's ever won for a comic book movie was Heath Ledger.
No, did he win?
Yeah, he won posthumously. Because if you die and you have an Oscar nomination, you will win that award.
Okay. Talking awards, I got sort of close to my an Emmy. There's a local PBS program called 11th and Grant. And basically, it's local Montana music. And the producer on, or I don't know exactly what he does, basically is the symphonic leader. Won an Emmy for sound production.
Nice!
That's cool.
And I thought it was really interesting because Eric Funk...
Like a real Emmy or a statewide Emmy?
I think it was a regular Emmy.
Nice! That's awesome!
By the way...
11th and Grant is a great show. But I thought it was interesting because growing up, I used to play cello.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That's awesome.
7 years. Nice. And I was in the state... the statewide... They do a... I can't remember what it's called. Youth orchestra or symphony.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the conductors one of the years was Eric Funk, who just won an Emmy.
No kidding.
So an Emmy-winning conductor, huh?
Yeah. So I played orchestra with the Emmy-winning conductor.
That's awesome. That's like having a bacon number, dude. Which has to be like one or two nowadays, apparently. Yeah. That's what we're learning from Google.
That's the thing. When you've had a career that goes 30 years... Your bacon numbers are not as hard to come by.
By the way, Emmy, coolest looking award for my money. Like, it's just like, it looks fucking dangerous. Like, you could just kill multiple people.
You could stab somebody with an Emmy.
Like, if you introduce an Emmy into a Mad Max movie, there would be a double impaling. I guarantee, if you were to introduce an Emmy into it. It's too bad it's only... up for Oscars and not really ever up for an Oscar.
I am personally partial to the Grammy for one reason and one reason only.
Do you like old Victrolas that are gold and
pulse-sized? Well, I do, but that's not the reason.
Okay.
I have an overriding belief in trophies of all kinds. The best trophies are the ones you can drink things out of after you've won them. And you can drink out of a Grammy, and that's good enough for me.
That's true. They got that kind of... That,
yeah, you can turn it sideways and totally drink it.
You can pour a shot of tequila in there. I know, I've held one.
That's right. You had an Emmy winning
Grammy winning Terrence Simeon. Yeah. And I just, so that's my thing, is like, for me, a trophy that I can drink out of will always be cooler than a trophy that I can't.
That's why a Stanley Cup is...
That's why it's the greatest, one of the many reasons why it's the greatest trophy in sports.
I would say for danger, number two is probably the Larry O'Brien trophy for the NBA. There's some corners on that shit that can fuck you up.
I would have to say the MLB World Series trophy. You could stab somebody with an MLB trophy.
What does it look like?
It's a ring of flags.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I remember that now.
I'm not sure you. I think you could stab someone, but they look. That trophy brittle to me that it looks like you tried to stab it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just unfun.
Okay. I did not see the episode of Game of Thrones tonight. As usual, we'll be a week behind. But did you guys both see the one from last week?
Game of Thrones?
Stannis is evil now.
Dude, I didn't like him.
You lost your
father
of the year status.
Yeah, and I momentarily regained it when, you know.
He had the nice moment with Shireen earlier in the season.
Well, when he was talking about how he would not sacrifice his daughter.
Oh, sure.
I was like,
yeah,
oh,
and he was
yeah.
totally connecting with her.
I was so proud of myself for this. My buddy, I actually got him into Game of Thrones way back when, before the show came out. I was like, this show's coming. You should read these books before the show starts. And now he's actually read further than me. I haven't read the fifth book, and I won't till the show's over. But we were talking about what happened because Stannis is one of his favorite characters in the book. And all I knew is that something happened in this episode involving Stannis that made him happy. So I wrote down my guess and sealed it in an envelope and gave it to him. And I totally fucking nailed it. I was so proud of myself.
Well, I will say that when I started watching the episode, the second that they were like, when they presented that we're trapped, we can't go forward, we can't go backward, I'm like, yeah, he's sacrificing his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Like that little bit of respect I gained for him a couple episodes back just immediately dissolved. And I was like, nah, he's
That's why he's I a can't fucker. Wait to watch tonight / next season, depending on when they address it, just because if Melisandre's blood magic doesn't work after sacrificing Shireen,
she's fucked.
Stannis is going to be so goddamn angry.
Well, the thing is, she already established earlier that she doesn't really do magic, right? I mean,
except for the shadow baby out of her vagina. That happened.
Oh, that did happen.
That happened.
So she does some magic, but she established with another
character.
She's
as much a charlatan as she is legitimate.
Yeah. So that's right. She had the.
So this could go either way.
Baby.
It could either be for real or be more charlatan tricks from her. Because a lot of the stuff she's done with Stannis and other burnings and shit like that has been things where she did it and then things happened to work out for her in ways that she had no control over. And that seems like it's almost like one of those fraud psychics. Like they're just betting that they can get along this long enough that by the time
but
you're out the door,
good's
you didn't realize.
Something good's
going
to happen along the
exactly,
way.
Exactly. That by the time you leave, they have no idea you weren't in control.
That's going to be a battle too, where you're like, who do you root for? Because they're like, so you have one ruler who maybe he's not horrible, who holds the North right now, but like his illegitimate son, or I guess now legitimate son,
yeah, is
like
the worst.
Cut off a dude's dick, dude, and I just can't.
Dude,
get
he is
him.
Like
plus,
the worst.
Plus
like
raping.
I'm
like,
ready to bring
Sansa
back
and
Joffrey. Like if I had to choose between Joffrey and
that's
Mo
Ramsey.
I had a really good laugh when somebody was like, "Where are all our villains now that Joffrey's gone?" I just laughed because I'm like
Ramsey.
I'm like, look, here's the thing. Like Joffrey is like. He is a top-tier villain. Like, you're not going to do better than Joffrey. You're just not. He's amazing. But, like, that is a show that is able to, like, spin out villains. Like, that's never a problem, you know? Like, Game of Thrones is very adept at finding villains. I'm not even worried about that. But I really... And, of course, I mean, let's not even bury the big thing. The whole thing with Cersei, where she almost... Like, she spends a lot of the episode with Tywin and then almost gets assassinated, and then the dragon swoops down, takes out a bunch of people.
Not Cersei.
Yeah, not Cersei, and not
that's
Tywin.
That's Daenerys.
And not Tywin either. Tywin's dead.
Tyrion.
Tyrion, sorry. Dude, I suck at this. Yeah, Cersei's...
I was like, wait, there was a scene where Cersei talked to her dead dad last week? What
Cersei's
was I
mother drunk.
I totally missed that.
Cersei's mother drunk, I'm sorry. Queen of Dragons, whatever the
Kelly
fuck.
Kelly C. That's what I call it. No, it's
her.
Emily Clark. She is, of course, Emilia. She is, of course, Daenerys Targaryen, the Stormborn and the Unburnt and the Mother of Dragons and many other epithets and titles
that.
I can't throw in there.
That.
Just call her Kelly C.
But when she gets on that dragon and rides away, that was a great moment in that thing.
Real
like
good
a
moment.
Really well done.
What really bothered me is she's like, I'm leaving all you fuckers there. And everybody's kind of like, you're not taking us with?
There's room on that dragon. I can see it.
She totally pulled the Titanic.
Her thighs are going to be so
like,
chafed when she lands.
I kind of feel like the dragon like took out the danger before it flew off.
There was still harpies there.
The dragon didn't take out the danger. The dragon is the danger.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I did understand that.
I was just trying to make a Breaking Bad reference. The dragon is the one who knocks.
You hear the dragon in the middle of the night. You wake up and the sheep is gone. Isn't that why it got locked up in the first place?
Well,
or was it that one or
no,
the other?
No, it was
the
killing kids.
The other two. Drogon is the one who was flying free and
you
picked
know
her
the
up.
Name of the dragon?
It's Drogon, yeah.
Drogon. That one's easy to remember because it's just dragon with one letter changed.
You guys are watching this at a level I'm not watching it. Like, I just...
Well, you have to remember I read the first four books, so
right,
I have that name
right.
in my head.
I am
too.
Just reading a lot of shit on the internet.
Yeah, thanks, Google. Shout out to you.
It's Yahoo.
All right. Well, should we end this? We're at like 58
minutes. Yes, because I have to pee so badly.
All right. So take it easy.
Not on the porch, Zach.
God damn it.
Not safe for network.
So when you get the actual script in your hands, how is it that you memorize everything?
I mean, there's like, you write the first letter of each word.
That's what Robert Downey Jr. does.
Sure, yeah. And that's great for Robert Downey Jr., but that
that's
just
great gets, for Robert Downey Jr.
That just gets me so confused.
RDJ.
So
RDJ.
We won't be seeing you in an Iron Man suit anytime soon.
Well, not on stage. In my off time, maybe. But I don't know what you're doing in my bedroom, so please leave.
That's debatable.
I think the way we argue matters. The more diverse populations we have to argue with, the better. The internet, it gives you a lot of zealotry, and a lot of that insane, you know, 9/11 was an inside job, or the moon landing never happened, or whatever. But, you know, if we could look at the flip side of that, too, you get a whole bunch of information that gets to fly around the world in a heartbeat, and all of a sudden everybody knows the same damn thing.
We had a good life.
Is talking about the Juggalo community on the podcast so publicly as we do,
yeah,
does that set us up as a target in the future, potentially?
It's as much of a threat as a dirty 400-pound topless woman like running at you from a couple hundred yards away can be. You know what I mean?
This is family over here.
Family.
Box office battle.
If you were to take the male lead of your film and put him into a romantic comedy, would I root for him?
I have to say, we have seen this romantic comedy. Liv Tyler is his daughter, and he saves the human race in Armageddon.
Is that a romantic comedy, though?
You know, you had me until you said Armageddon.
Shooting the show.
My parents always stocked up on ramen. They didn't really know how much I ate. And I would actually scrounge up change and go to the store and buy more ramen so it didn't look like I ate as much.
Eric.
That's what alcoholics do. My mom should have never taught me how to make it.
Yeah, you had a problem.
The Alien Movie Project.
The aliens crash a kid's birthday party, basically.
Which, again... I think supports the frat aliens notion. Oh god, where am I? Oh guys, hey, is there anything to drink at this party? You guys.
You guys, I'm gonna have some of this cake.
Hey,
if I cut this cake?
Can I open this? Are you gonna wear that hat?
I'm just gonna take some of this cake.
Montauk Skies.
By the way, his character trait is he constantly pulls out stomach acid pills. What do you call it? Like Pepto-Bismol or something? And he just constantly chews the pills every time something comes wrong. He's like, ah.
Yeah.
Just chewing the paint.
Can I just say I appreciate...
Washes them down with a cup of coffee.
I appreciate the subtlety used by saying his character trait, because we know this is the type of movie where each character gets one trait.
Find all our podcasts on iTunes. Not safe for network.